Let's jump on board and cut them to pieces.
This famous quote is attributed to none other than the swashbuckling historical pirate known as Blackbeard. Best known as the captain of Queen Anne's Revenge, Blackbeard was at the helm of a fleet of pirates that operated by their own code and plundered the high seas in search of riches. Blackbeard has inspired generations of storytelling in his own right, from the 1718 novel On Stranger Tides to the 2015 Hollywood movie Pan, a stylized prequel to a better-known novel, J.M. Barrie's Peter Pan. In the movie, the character of Blackbeard takes center stage, serving as the main antagonist. One story, however, that seems to linger above all others in regards to Blackbeard's legendary life is the existence of his so-called lost treasure. But is there any truth to this claim, or is it simply tall tales? Today's story is on the life, death, and legacy of Blackbeard. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Haunted History. I'm your host, Megan, and every week I'll be taking you on a little journey through our world's haunted history. I hope everyone had a lovely week. We are staying quite busy working on our new after-show series, where Chloe and I will chat about episodes and answer any questions that you might have. So with that being said, I want to invite you guys to connect with us with any questions or comments you might have. So it could be comments about or questions about episodes, about either of us, if you're just interested in, you know, knowing us a bit more. We're really open to anything. We'll really talk about anything. We're going to be posting a story that you can reply to on our socials, so feel free to reply on that with any questions or comments. And you can also feel free to email hauntedhistorypod@gmail.com, and we can take your question there. And we might not be able to reply to everyone individually, just depending on how many people reach out, but we will definitely get to as many responses as possible on the after show. And I also want to take a moment to thank the podcast, The Melting Pat, for the shout out on his most recent episode. We really love connecting with other podcasters, and we really appreciated the mention. So The Melting Pat can be found on all platforms. He talks about various things like parenthood, music, sports, and he releases new episodes every Saturday. So again, thank you, The Melting Pat, for the shout out. Now, friends, let's get to today's story. Before Blackbeard became, well, Blackbeard, he was just Edward Teach. Born sometime around 1680, little is known about Teach before his rise to piratehood. It's often thought that he served as a British privateer during the Great Age of Sail. The Great Age of Sail is the period from the mid-16th century to the mid-19th century that was characterized by the dominance of sailing ships across all matters of trade, travel, and war. Teach is thought to have been active at sea under the British Crown during the War of Spanish Succession, which ran from 1701 to 1713. That's right. Blackbeard's origin story is that he started off more or less on the up and up. A privateer, you see, is a private entity commissioned for a war effort. During these war efforts, the authorizing forces would offer something called a letter of marque. This is essentially a permission slip, allowing a privateer to board and rob ships belonging to the enemy. It was, in essence, a license to attack. By contrast, boarding and robbing a ship for oneself without the protective banner of a letter of marque would be considered piracy. During the Spanish War of Succession, Teach would have sailed around the West Indies, plundering under the banner of England. While this war was being fought in Europe, another war was being fought in North America between the French, English, and Spanish colonists. This war is colloquially known as Queen Anne's War. It's unclear when exactly Teach shed the protection of the letter of marque. Perhaps it was too restrictive for Teach's lofty ambitions. Either way, after the war, many men like Teach were left unemployed, but highly skilled in the naval arts, and perhaps privateering had whet his palate for something similar: piracy. Teach soon found himself under the wing of a captain named Benjamin Hornigold. You just can't make this up. Captain Hornigold was instrumental in Teach's shift from privateering to piracy, offering up instructions to young Edward about the special code of ethics that pirates partook in. The Pirate Code, or Articles of Agreement, is such an interesting concept. When a group of sailors grouped together, they drafted a code that everyone agreed on. This code stipulated what was deemed as the rightful code of conduct, so how spoils were divided and how injured sailors would be compensated in the event of an injury. It was a very democratic process. As a sidebar, the first written pirate code was said to have been written by a Portuguese buccaneer named Bartholomew Português. Buccaneers are pirates that operated chiefly in the Caribbean Sea. They're also attributed to having kicked off the Golden Age of piracy, which lasted roughly between 1650 and 1730. Interestingly, the word buccaneer comes from the French word boucan, which is a grill used for smoking meat on a ship. Smoked meat in French can be translated to viande boucanée. There are many other terms that were used to designate pirates that originated or operated from specific regions. Buccaneers seem to have first originated out of Haiti. The Spanish called their pirates corsarios, and the French would call their pirates flibustiers. So, the first pirate code was said to have been put to paper in the early 1660s. These codes typically varied from captain to captain and could even be altered per voyage, but they all more or less covered the same issues. As I mentioned earlier, all members of the ship were taken care of. The crew was asked to sign the code and pledge allegiance, solidifying that all parties were in agreement. The code, it was said, was then pinned somewhere visible and prominent, like on the captain's door. The codes were loosely based upon official ship's articles, such as those written by the British Navy. Now back to Edward Teach and his tutelage under Captain Hornigold. In 1716, Captain Hornigold placed Teach in charge of a captured sloop. So a sloop, for those of you who don't know, is a small ship. It was quite popular amongst pirate culture for its speed, high maneuverability, and shallow hull. Sloops could easily float over the shallowest parts of a body of water and could advance even in the absence of wind due to the presence of a few pairs of oars. For this reason, using a sloop was an effective way to make a quick pirate's exit. Teach proved to be an excellent leader, and less than a year later, on November 28, 1717, it was said that he was put in control of a frigate captured near the island of St. Vincent in the West Indies. Now, I bet you didn't tune in today thinking that you would be given a crash course in different naval implements, but here we are. A frigate is a much bigger ship than a sloop. It's basically the classic pirate ship. Designed as a warship, a frigate could weigh up to 1,000 tons. They had 3 masts with square sails and up to 40 mounted guns. A frigate could house a crew of up to 200. When frigates were being used by the Royal Navy, they could be used to escort, patrol, and scour the shorelines against pirates. When under pirate control, however, they could prove formidable for fighting, looting, and pillaging. Teach's new frigate was rumored to have been a Bristol-built ship named Concord. This ship, in turn, was rumored to have been stolen by French privateers, who then renamed it La Concorde. Edward Teach, for his part, having earned the ship in his own right and from his own merits, really leaned into the whole aura that he was beginning to cultivate on the high seas. He named his new ship the Queen Anne's Revenge, and he also adopted his new moniker, Blackbeard. The Queen Anne's Revenge would be Blackbeard's flagship vessel. He would only use her for a year, but in that short time would accrue hordes of treasure and other ships, amassing a flotilla. She was more than capable of spearheading this endeavor, as she had a crew of 300 and boasted 40 guns at her disposal. Prior to this, Blackbeard had already annexed a slew of ships to his retinue, including Revenge, which belonged to a wealthy Barbadian-born Englishman turned pirate named Stede Bonnet. Bonnet was perhaps ill-suited for piracy, as he ceded control of his ship to Blackbeard, being unable to control a crew of his own. Bonnet remained as a guest on board Blackbeard's ship for quite some time. He was, it seemed, simply fond of the pirate lifestyle. As for her captain, Blackbeard was apparently named as such due to his appearance, which generated much fear across the seas. He was said to sport a long black beard that grew well below his waist. He would also often braid his hair and beard with ribbons. He was said to put lit fuses in his hair so that a thick cloud of smoke followed him wherever he went, giving him a terrifying and otherworldly appearance. Tales of Blackbeard's ruthlessness ensured that stories of his deeds preceded him. Rumors of his callousness, even with members of his own crew, assured allegiance and lessened the chances of mutiny on board. It seems that Blackbeard did little to curtail these rumors, as they facilitated his piratical actions. Queen Anne's Revenge boasted a giant black flag with a horned skeleton piercing a blood-red heart and toasting to the devil. As it was unmistakable, other ships would cower in fear upon seeing it. To quote legendary circus magnate P.T. Barnum, Blackbeard was no stranger to the fact that there was no such thing as bad publicity. For a while, he spun the stories that were told about him for leverage with his crew and enemies. Speaking of his crew, Blackbeard sailed Queen Anne's Revenge from the west coast of Africa to the Caribbean for a year, adding more crew and ships with each sailing. Blackbeard's second-in-command, Israel Hands, also known as Basilica Hands, was handed control of the ship Adventure, seized in March of 1718. Blackbeard's growing fleet attacked British, Dutch and Portuguese merchant ships, amassing a flotilla and fortune before setting his sights on the coast of the United States. In May of 1718, Blackbeard sailed Queen Anne's Revenge to South Carolina. He was at the pinnacle of his power and named himself Commodore, a designation reserved for someone who's in charge of a navy. In the port at Charlestown, now present-day Charleston, Blackbeard and his flotilla instilled a blockade. Each time a vessel tried to enter or leave the port, it was stopped, boarded, and robbed. Over the course of a little less than a week, the blockade successfully overtook around 9 ships. Blackbeard also took in as hostages some prominent members of Charlestown. He used this as leverage to secure medical supplies for his crew. He threatened to execute the hostages if his demands weren't met. Blackbeard sent a trio of crewmen to plead his case to the Charlestown governor and ultimately retrieve medical supplies. The agreed-upon time frame for the exchange came and went. Blackbeard advanced 8 of his ships in retaliation. The townsfolk were quaking in their boots with fear, anticipating a retaliatory attack from Blackbeard and his crew at any moment. Finally, Blackbeard's envoy resurfaced, late. Very late. He explained that his escorts had been derailed, having gotten irretrievably drunk at a tavern. It said that Blackbeard did keep his end of the bargain and released the hostages. He did, however, keep some of their expensive clothing, thus returning them in various states of undress. Now, sometime after this, Blackbeard learned that Woods Rogers, the first royal governor of the Bahamas, has set his sights onto Blackbeard and his crew for capture. Rogers was on a mission to purge the oceans of pirates, and he had Blackbeard in his crosswires. Blackbeard sailed towards North Carolina in response. There, he grounded his prized ship, Queen Anne's Revenge, as well as Bonnet's ship, Revenge, at Topsail Inlet. After grounding the ship, its contents were loaded into a smaller sloop, the aforementioned Adventure. During this debacle, Blackbeard also marooned part of his crew on a small island. It's believed that he may have intentionally done this to punish dissenters, or to give the remaining crew members a heftier payout, as all goods were split equally. At the time, King George I enacted the Proclamation for Suppressing of Pirates. This was part of an anti-piracy campaign that promised royal pardons for acts of piracy. Blackbeard had most likely heard of this pardon, and he and Bonnet are said to have hatched a plan to claim the pardon as a way to expunge their litany of misdeeds. The caveat was that this pardon only excused acts that were committed before January 5th, 1718. Since the blockage on Charlestown had occurred in May of that year, Blackbeard and Bonnet knew that they would still be held accountable and possibly even executed for their misdeeds. At the time, Blackbeard put his trust in Governor Charles Eden, betting that he would be flexible when it came to exercising the pardon. Bonnet was the first to seek out the pardon. Perhaps it was Bonnet's lineage as a Barbadian-born English noble, or the fact that he was the first to step out. Either way, Bonnet was pardoned by Charles Eden and was even allowed to retrieve his ship, Revenge, from the sandbars of Topsail Inlet. In doing so, Bonnet collected the rest of his crew who still lay marooned on the small island nearby. Bonnet realized that Blackbeard had stripped his ship of valuables. As such, he intended to seek revenge on his old captain. He and his crew returned to piracy a mere handful of months later. It seemed that Bonnet was unable to find his footing in life. He was unsatisfied with the soft life of nobility, but didn't thrive as a pirate either. For a minute, it seemed like he was ready to hang in his hat and retire from his life as the so-called gentleman pirate. But the lifestyle beckoned him back, and unfortunately, he was ultimately tried and hung for piracy in September 1718. It's generally believed that Blackbeard and Israel Hands purposefully scuttled Queen Anne's Revenge on the sandbars of South Carolina. Scuttling is when the act of grounding a ship is deliberate and often strategic. In this case, as we mentioned earlier, it allowed for the marooning of half the crew, increasing the payouts of the other members. It's also possible that the crew got wind of Blackbeard's plans to secretly ask for a pardon and that he marooned any rebellious crewmen as a result. Either way, just as Bonnet had done, Blackbeard also sought a pardon from Governor Charles Eden. And the pardon was granted. Blackbeard, for his part, sailed to the town of Bath and tried to live a normal life. This, of course, went as well as you would imagine. Blackbeard was restless, and Governor Eden knew as much. Retired pirates were often given privateer contracts in order to keep them occupied, which is how Governor Eden attempted to remedy the situation. Blackbeard, however, was drawn back to the only life he knew and loved. He anchored his ship Adventure in Ocracoke Inlet, where he could see the comings and goings of various ships careening around the settlements of the Carolinas. There are tales of a legendary night of drinking where several pirates of the age, namely Blackbeard, Israel Hands, Robert Deal, and Calico Jack, reveled, drank, and danced during the time that Blackbeard was anchored at Ocracoke Island. Perhaps Blackbeard's days would have ended like this. He would have slowed down with age, put more stock into talking about the good old days with the friends that had managed to survive the perilous nature of their shared profession, but fate had different designs on the fabled pirate. Blackbeard had come to the attention of the governor of Virginia, Alexander Spotswood. Spotswood did not regard Blackbeard's partying as harmless, and he saw through his ill-concealed illegal activities. His debauchery was legendary, and he feared it could mean further disruption down the line for the Virginia coast. Some of Blackbeard's entourage had already begun to spill over into seaside towns of Virginia, which spurred a call to action. When a French ship was robbed nearby, Blackbeard feigned innocence, stating that he essentially found the ship drifting empty at sea. This was the push that Governor Spotswood needed. He invoked colonial law and sought to have Blackbeard arrested. On the evening of November 21st, 1718, Lieutenant Robert Maynard, commissioned by Spotswood, led two sloops and snuck up on the Ocracoke Island. There, Blackbeard was entertaining his guests. His guard was down, his crew depleted, and by all accounts, he was having a great time. Maynard, unfamiliar with the terrain, decided to strike at daybreak. On November 22nd, a fierce battle ensued, with Blackbeard and the small remainder of his men fighting dearly. Their escape to sea was blocked, and there was little to do but fight relentlessly, which they did. In the end, Blackbeard was killed in battle, which is probably what he would have wanted. His corpse was thrown in the inlet, and his head was brought back to Virginia. It's said that his head was placed on a pole in Chesapeake Bay as a warning to pirates and remained there for many years. Blackbeard's life was one lived outside the perimeters of society. The fact that a golden age of piracy existed tangentially to the age of sail is telling. Whenever colonial forces sought to plunder under the banners of morality, virtue, religion, royal decree, and other forces would act in retaliation for collective and sometimes even community gain. As I mentioned earlier, the line between privateering and piracy was literally a paperslip, and although overly simplistic in this story, the idea of a pirate code does leave one thinking about how structures outside of dominant orders can and do function. Blackbeard's legacy is complex. He was a man that understood the power of marketing oneself. His image, in every sense, preceded him. From the dramatic flag that announced the arrival of Queen Anne's Revenge, to the literal smoke that showed on his head, he was a man that relied on theatrics and the value of storytelling to play to his own advantage. Fear was a tool for him. However, it should be mentioned that no confirmed records exist of him exerting any type of harm on his crew, aside from marooning them, of course. Now, what about some of the other stories that center around Blackbeard? Well, it's said that when Blackbeard ran Queen Anne's Revenge aground, it was but a ploy to distract from his true mission, burying countless spoils in various caches around the Carolinas and Virginia. In 1996, archaeologists discovered what is widely believed to be the sunken relic of Queen Anne's Revenge, 25 feet underwater and less than a mile and a half away from the shoreline. The excavation process has been slow, with the pieces being removed slowly as funding and proper diving conditions materialize. Pieces of iron and flecks of gold have been retrieved from the wreckage, but nothing that concretely ties it to Blackbeard's flagship, or heaps of treasure, which have yet to be found. Many claim that in those last moments on Ocracoke Island, Blackbeard scrambled to bury any of the treasure that was still in his proximity. For this reason, there exists a cottage industry of treasure-related tourism around Chesapeake Bay Beach and surrounding areas. It's almost inconceivable, given how renowned Blackbeard's story is, that his supposed reign of terror on the seas lasted only a year. So it's with this in mind that I would gently suggest that there probably isn't much treasure buried in his wake. Blackbeard was most likely already struggling to compensate his crew in the end, given that he had marooned many of them, and it seemed like his appetite for plunder was only matched by his desire for excess and debauchery, as demonstrated by his demise. Suffice to say, just as stories of him preceded him in life, so do they precede him in death. Well, friends, that's it for me today. If you've enjoyed our time spent together, please take a minute and leave a review or give us a rating. And as always, have a wonderful week, and I'll see you all next Tuesday.